Well, good evening again. It's good to be back with you. Yeah, there's a handout. If anyone did not get a handout, just raise your hand and Vernon will get it for you. Okay, Vernon has the handouts over there. And need one over here too. Anyone else? And there's a couple coming in the door, they'll need one. Okay. Very good. Last time we were together, 2 weeks ago, we brought a bunch of resources along. I brought them along again, so if anyone wants to look at them, or if you weren't here, they're up here on the front row. I did want to mention that one of them was The Wonderful Way Babies Are Made by Larry Christensen. It's a book that, in its original form, I liked very much. This is a reprint. I don't like it. The words are okay, but the pictures are too graphic, and I would not read it to your children with the pictures that are in here. I'm really saddened by it because it's not what I would recommend. So I want to say that as a disclaimer. I wanted to mention that the last time we were up here, and one of the parents said they don't feel comfortable with it. And I said I wanted you to know that I don't feel comfortable with it either. I would like to get, originally we read it to our children because we had the first edition and it was very well done. And if you can find an old edition, maybe on half.com or something like that, originally Larry Christensen's book was good. So there are some other resources, we might refer to them again. I guess before we start looking at the handout, I would just like to talk to you a bit about why, how do you see parenting? Why did you get married, and why did you want to have children? And oftentimes, our motives and our reasons are pretty self-centered when we first get married. I got married because I wanted Grace, and I wanted to be happy with Grace, and then we wanted children. But you know what? It was pretty self-centered, and those songs that we just sang tonight were talking about how that parenting really is an exercise in selflessness and humility. And so when I look at parenting today, I come across from a different perspective. Our son is 37, our daughter is 35. Am I right on that, dear? Oh, I brought Grace along. Everybody, you want to meet my sweetheart. So Grace, stand up, take a bow. Anyway, she's the delight of my heart, and I'm so glad she did come along. I can wear her out because I'm on the go a lot, so I don't always ask her to come along. So I said, oh, you got to come along. They keep saying they won't listen to me if you don't come along. So anyway, so she came along. you know, I know Vernon's here, Mark's here, and some of the rest of you. I don't know all of you, but some of you have had counseling experiences, and you've been doing some counseling. And we still see a lot of hurting people. And it gets old, and it gets wearing. And sometimes we just want to find that cabin out up in the mountains somewhere and move to it and just forget all about what's going on, because it just gets a little heavy. The last few weeks have been several really heavy weeks. Yesterday morning I met with a pastor, and he was struggling. But he said there's exciting things happening, and I met with another person, and they were really, really struggling. The past couple weeks it's been just full of struggling, heavy people. Got an email just a day or two ago and had a couple follow-ups with it. And it's a woman writing, and she says that my husband is a pastor, and he just confessed to me that he's into porn. Had another man says, I've shattered my wife and children because I had to come clean and tell them that I've been in porn for a long time. going to be meeting this week with another struggling relationship. It's another conversation we were having yesterday with someone who is involved or dealing with a man who just got out of prison after being in prison for a long time for molesting his children. Why am I going through this garbage when we're kind of talk about parents? Last night, Grace and I went out to eat, and a man came up to us, a conservative Anabaptist man, and he said, would you go along to Harrisburg with us to meet with the government to see if we could get an Anabaptist exemption to the mandated law where volunteer people like Sunday school teachers and everybody else have to have background checks? Now, here's my heartbeat. In all the situations that we talked about, all the things that we looked at, all the difficult things that have been coming along, there is a solution. Do you know where I see the solution? In parenting. Honestly, I see the solution in parenting. Because in looking at those situations, the man who said he just shattered his wife and children's lives, he said, you know, all my life, he says, growing up, I could never please my dad. So they could never do anything that was good enough to please him. And oftentimes, is that an excuse for porn? No. It is not. I don't ever look for excuses, but I do look for causes. I look for causes, because if you find a cause, then you can deal with it. And every single one of those situations I told you about, didn't take long at all to find the cause. And it almost always goes back to childhood. Now, we don't want to talk about things to develop a paranoia of parenting or grandparenting. But what I really believe is the answer is in parenting. I really believe that it is. And so that's why we're here. That's why we want to talk about it. And it is where my heart beats. I believe that the answer is prevention. We have to start preventing these things. Instead of trying to find the cure and the cause, we need to start preventing it. And, you know, it's so exciting because we're here tonight, and a bunch of parents representing families that are going to impact generations to come. We have grandparents here. And even though Mark gave his disclaimer, he's not done parenting yet. He's just getting started in the grandparenting stage. But seriously, you know, it does take. I'm so grateful for our community type of life. And it's something we need to guard because, you know, we have three grandchildren. We actually have four, the one we just haven't met yet. So in a few months, we'll hopefully meet number four. But we take pretty seriously grandparenting. We love grandparenting. And we're looking forward to. But we believe that we also can have a huge impact on their lives the way we're involved with our grandchildren's lives. So to me, it's still part of parenting. So what I would really like to say is intentional parenting, and the handout, we're calling it there, capturing the hearts of our children. I believe that's the key, is capturing our children's hearts. And I wrote, now if you want to write anything down, I don't know if you have a paper, if you want to make some notes, I should have put this on a handout, and I did not. But everybody likes two easy steps or three easy steps, right? So I have six easy steps for you. Okay. So the first one is this, and that is capturing your children's hearts. I believe we need to capture our children's hearts. And what's the age bracket there? Well, here's the age bracket from birth till death. That's how long you work at capturing your children's hearts from maybe even conception till death. You capture them in your heart, but then when they're born, bonding emotionally. You know, and we talked about the last time we were together, those foundational truths of belonging and love and significance that I believe God designed every single one of us to need. And when we as parents give belonging and love and significance to our children, it gives them the foundational strength and the solid foundation that they can build life on. And once again, we'll just bounce off of that. Jesus, if Father God knew that his son would need those things to get to be rejected, to be spit on, to be tortured, to be lashed and whipped and then crucified. If he felt he needed those foundations, he felt his son needed to hear, "This is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased," do you think our children need it any less? I don't think so. They need those foundational truths. And that's how we capture their hearts, by giving them unconditional belonging, unconditional love, and unconditional significance. They are significant because they're our child. Now, when it comes to that doesn't cover the whole picture, because there's discipline that we need to add on that. And what does that look like? We need to teach our children to do hard work, to complete their tasks, do them well, because out in the world, it's not going to be unconditional. Respect and acceptance is going to be based on their performance. In the home, no. But in the home, we teach them so that our approval has to be earned, and we teach them to do tasks well and to complete tasks. But bonding emotionally with our children, with love, belonging, significance, is so important. The second thing that I think is so important is that we need to safeguard our children. We talked about that. And I think, how do we safeguard our children? What are we safeguarding them from? Well, I think we start out by helping them deal with their childish curiosity. Children are curious, and you start seeing that. They're curious about everything. And after a while, they start getting curious about their bodies. And they get curious about their brother's bodies and their sister's bodies. And there's this childish curiosity about their bodies. It's not evil. It's not wrong. It's childish curiosity. And so we need to safeguard them from that childish curiosity developing into an overt focus on sexuality. And that can happen by simply not providing answers and healthy, age-appropriate answers for their childish curiosity. We talked about that. We have some resources over here. When to say no. Safeguarding them against wrong touch and inappropriate touch. Teaching them how to value their bodies and how to protect them. And we had those resources. My body is private. Here's another one, when to say no. This one's put out by the Weaverland Conference Church. They're free. This one you can get online. But there's two copies up here. If you would like to borrow one or both of them, a couple families could take them along if they want to. Bring them back the next time. I lose my resources sometimes, but you're welcome to look at them. And if you want to take them for a week and bring them back next Wednesday, that'd be fine. But we must do that. And those nasty things that we talked about early on, I see that so many times. What I see over and over again is sexuality is awakened at an early age in an inappropriate way. Because first of all, their childish curiosity has not been met. And as they get older, their curiosity deepens. And I think we can all, as adults, recognize this. It would be interesting to just have a roundtable discussion and say, how did you learn about sexuality? How did you learn about the facts of life? And do you want your children to learn them the same way? And I think most of you probably would say no. I believe God gave children parents to teach them the very important things about life. And so in capturing our children's hearts and then safeguarding our children, what we want to do is, what we want to talk about is a difference in a paradigm shift in the way people raised children years ago. It was a performance and a behavioral focus on raising children. Today, I think there's a much greater awakening, and the focus needs to be on relational parenting, where you are capturing their hearts, you are connecting with your children, so that you develop a relationship with them, that there's the open communication takes place, so that they feel safe. That you, for example, with their childish curiosity, if they're watching you change the diaper on a little brother or sister, and the opposite sex is watching, you it's okay. You know, years ago they would. That's hush hush. You don't let that happen. But your children are going to be curious. They are going to want to know. And if you give them age appropriate information, and in a wise and right way, they trust you. If you don't, they start wondering, I wonder what they're trying to hide. And then they're going to try and find answers. I can promise you, when we are curious in our young years going up to 10, 14, 15, if we haven't been told right things, we will find answers. You know that. And your children will find answers too. So why shouldn't you be the one who teaches it in a right, healthy way? I know we're repeating some things that we talked about, but I look at those nasty things that I was working with in the last couple of weeks and go, do you know what? Most of this stuff could have been prevented by parents. I believe that with all my heart. Maybe all of it. So we equip our children with tools. Those books that we talked about there, you give your children tools so that they know that they can respect their own bodies. You teach them what's okay touch, what's not okay touch, and who may not. And so it protects them because so much childish curiosity opens the door for exploration. And you can teach your children, but you also need to give them the tools to guard against their cousins, their relatives. I don't know. You all have heard it, right? You've heard it over and over again, the hurts and the pain. Those of you who deal with hurting people. It starts young. We can protect our children. We can protect our grandchildren. We can give them the tools so that they know, no, that's not acceptable. And a parent must always be safe. Safe so that the child can come and tell them anything. Once again, we're bouncing off of some things we talked about before. Age-appropriate answers to satisfy curiosity. I got a hold of some material from a pediatrician, Nadine Harris. She's a young black doctor, a pediatrician. And she did a TED Talk. Acquainted with TED Talks? It was pretty fascinating. Not Christian biblical. Just from a medical doctor, and in there she said 8 out of 10 girls are sexually abused. And what she was saying is she was talking about post traumatic stress disorder that everybody talks about coming back from war. And she says what she's starting to see and becoming aware of is what doctors and physicians are dealing with today is PTSD from the home. And she says it is creating huge amounts of physical problems, all with psychological underpinnings. And you know, it'd be nice to say it doesn't happen with us. It doesn't have to happen with us. That's why we talk about these things. But it was her information was very powerful, very powerful. Now she's talking about the world. She probably has no clue about who Anabaptists are or whatever. But 8 out of 10, she's seeing that in the world. And I used to think that maybe it was worse in the end, but I don't think so. But I would say it's really high. It's really high. It's not a lot of difference in our communities as it is out there. But guess what? In our homes, it doesn't have to be. This is what parents must stop. And we can. You don't want to put paranoia in your children. You want to give them tools. And you want to connect with their hearts so that they can come and tell you anything. Anything. Anything? It needs to be safe that they can come and talk to you about anything. And you need to hear when they're talking. You don't poo-hoo it. You listen. And then you try and find out. You don't start blaming. You don't start assigning fault. You just listen. And then you try and discern what you're hearing, and where you take the next step. You can't always prevent everything, but you can deal with it redemptively, always. So that's number two. Number three is discovering life with wonder. Okay? Number three is discovering life with wonder. Do you ever watch your children just look at things and just get so excited about something? Our son sent us a picture tonight. It's on my phone. It's on my antique here. But anyway, he sent me a, and it's our grand. He said I talked to him on the phone and he sent me a picture of it. He said he had a box. He took something out of a box and it was on the floor, and she's crawling back and forth through that box. You know, it's just the wonder of crawling through an empty box at 1 year of age. And so you want your children, you want to encourage your children to experience life with delight. You want them to be able to get wonder in the smallest of things. Most of you know my brother Frank, right? I think a lot of you do. He has a daughter, Beth, who is deaf. Okay, and one time he was going to talk to a men's retreat, and he asked Beth, he says, "Beth, what should I tell them?" And she said, "Tell parents to keep life simple so that their children see life with wonder and excitement." Do you know what the biggest enemy to this point is? Is electronic babysitting. Okay? Keep electronics. I mean, your children have to learn. I work on the computer every day, a lot on the computer. I like electronics. I use it. But you don't want to allow your children to be babysat with electronics. I'm distressed about what I see with young children with cell phones and electronics. Hey, you need to teach them to use it. But you know what? You can give your children, when it's time for them to have a phone, you can give them a dumb phone. They don't have to have a smartphone. We're dealing with a situation back home that a smartphone opened the door to the worst kind of garbage to a beautiful young girl who I don't know if she'll ever recover from it. And Dad gave it to her. I go, "What in the world ailed Dad?" So somehow we need to create the environment in our home so our children aren't spellbound with this, but they're spellbound by what they see around them and spellbound about God's creation so that they see life with wonder. The time for the electronics can come soon enough. And yes, they can learn it, but it needs to be limited. We really appreciate what our daughter's been doing. They have some of those kind of games, but I don't remember. Grace, do you know what kind of a time frame that she's limited them to? It's she really limits our grandsons with electronic time. And you know what? I'm so grateful. And she says she wants them outside. She wants them playing. She wants them playing ball. And they have animals. You know, you want your children to see life with wonder. And the next thing is. You want to begin, and that when discovering life with wonder, I would call that birth till puberty, okay? Birth till puberty, and then a vision. The next one would be a vision with manhood, for a vision of manhood and womanhood, and I put in there 6 to 12. You want to start early with your children and talk about your vision of them becoming a young man and a young woman. You don't want to push it. You're not trying to make them into a. You don't want them to become grown up too soon. You want them to enjoy those years. You want to enjoy that time. But you can talk in ways that give them some anticipation of what it will be to become a man and become a woman. And here's one way you can do that. When you are a little bit frustrated with your 8-year-old, they don't frustrate you, do you? But when you have an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 7-year-old, and you're pretty frustrated with them, here's a good way to talk to them. Just simply say, "You know what? You're acting like an 8-year-old. But I'm not raising an 8-year-old. I'm raising a man." And you know what he does? He wants to be a man. See, you give him a call to manhood. You're not mangling their childhood. You want them to be an 8-year-old. You want to enjoy it. But see, when they're acting dumb, just like an 8-year-old can, you can call them up by saying, "I'm not raising an 8-year-old. You're acting like an 8-year-old. "Well, I am an 8-year-old. "Yeah, but I'm not raising an 8-year-old. I'm raising a man." You can do the same thing with a girl. "I'm not raising a girl. I'm not raising an 8-year-old girl. I'm raising a woman." And you call them up. Now, you don't want to push them out of their enjoyable years, but see, you can use that when they're acting stupid. You never acted stupid when you were that age, I know, but your children do. I think I really appreciated my father. He didn't use those words, and I borrowed those from somebody else when somebody else told me that It was another pastor friend. He told me that he uses that. He's used that on his children. And he says it has worked amazingly well. And so I passed that on. But I think my dad did it in his own way. He called us up to look ahead of us and say, yeah, that's what we want to aspire to. And we had a grandfather who did the same thing. He called us up. And he gave us responsibilities that were not way above us, but a little bit above us, so that we would work up to it. It's so easy to dumb down things today. In fact, our whole world is dumbing down what we expect of our children. I mean, look what they're doing in school. I mean, our expectations have been lowered. Now, we need to have the level appear above them, so they work up to it. Not so high they feel like they can't attain it, but so they have something to work toward, a vision of manhood and womanhood. At that age of 6 to 12, wow, I think that's an ideal time, and I showed you this, and I guess my experiences in the last 2 weeks, I'm going, we need to porn-proof our children. And I did read this myself, and I feel good about it. So I'm going to recommend it. Good pictures, bad pictures. Porn-proofing today's young kids. It's not if they're going to be exposed to it. It's when they're going to be exposed to it. And so if you can catch them early and talk about it in a healthy, wise, and right way, and I think this does a pretty good job of it, you should proofread every resource. You don't just take it and take it at face value. But you read it and you say, okay, I can use this. I can skip over a few things here. But this I can use. This has material in it. And so this has, it gives them steps. It talks about their brain and how their brain is attracted. They have a feeling brain and a thinking brain, and it explains it really simple for young children so that they can understand what's happening when they see it. So that when they engage in pornography, the illustration there says, well, that pornography grabs your thinking brain. I mean, it grabs your feeling brain. And now you must engage your thinking brain so that your feeling brain don't take over and run with this, because it has horrible results. And it does a good job. Age appropriate, once again. And I would say, there you're looking at probably 5, 6 till 12. And you go, that's pretty young. I just talked to a man the other day that he was exposed to it by another family member when he was 5 years old. Now, you shouldn't fear that, but you need to know what's going on. You need to know what's going on. This fellow I was talking with, that he said he shattered his family. He said there was a place where people discarded trash close to his place, and they regularly found pornography there, just as children. And they'd bring it home and stash it in the barn. See, their childish curiosity was there. And here he is, a grandpa with children and grandchildren, and he shattered them because of what he came out with. Brothers, sisters, parents, we got to take it seriously. We have to. We need to be very intentional. And you know, parenting's fun. So don't get paranoid about all this. Just be intentional about it. Just say, we can do this. You know, we need to be trained. We need to be taught. I didn't know. I wish I knew a lot of this stuff when I was parenting. I remember reading Gordon MacDonald's book when we first adopted our children. It was called The Effective Father, and I read that book, and I am so grateful that I read that book. That book helped me so much, especially in the way I interacted with my daughter. He gave me pointers on connecting and capturing her heart and jerk-proofing her. And there's plenty of jerks out there. And dads, if you have daughters, it's your responsibility to jerk-proof your daughters. Teach them how to discern another guy. But you capture her heart. I know one of the things that I did is I bought her one of those. I bought at a jewelry store, I bought her a gold heart. And I didn't want her to wear the necklace, but I bought her a gold heart. And in that gold heart, it had a key. You've seen them already. You can break the key out. So I gave her the heart. I kept the key. And I said, the time's coming when the right man comes along and he wants your heart. I said, you have him talk to me. And when the time comes, you decide that this is the man that you're going to marry and you are going to marry, I'm going to give him that key to your heart. But until then, would you let Dad keep the key to your heart? I would like to keep your heart. And I'll do my best to protect it and protect you. Three times she told guys to come ask me if they could date her. And I got the opportunity to sit down with him, give him the third degree. I put the fear in him. I did. I really did. I said, I remember my son-in-law now, he came and asked me, and I said, hey, we need to go out to eat. So we went out to eat, and we had a good time just talking, visiting, and then I said, you're asking me to date my daughter. I said, you're not asking for my car, my truck. Maybe I told you this the other night. But I said, you're asking for my daughter. I said, you're asking me for something that's really precious to me. And I'm going to give you permission if you promise me a couple things. That when she's with you, she's always going to be safe. You're going to protect her. She's going to be safe from danger. And the second thing is you're going to protect her from yourself. You're going to protect her from your sexuality. And he's going to be safe from you. He agreed. Two weeks after they came back from their honeymoon, he came up to me and says, they had dated quite a long time. I thought he'd forget about it. But 2 weeks after they came back from their honeymoon, he came up to me and he says, Dad, I want to tell you I did what you asked me to. And my eyes filled with tears. Yes. So dads, we can capture our daughter's hearts and not let go of them. And today she's still my princess. Like a couple weeks ago we were up there and she gets a hug when we get there. She gets a hug. And my son does too. But I just told her, I said, and her pet name was Princess. I just said, thanks for being my princess. You're always going to be my princess. Yeah. The next one the one was having a vision for manhood and womanhood. The next one I would call preparing for manhood and womanhood. And we have passport to purity. And Galen isn't here tonight, I don't think, but he talked about it. Yeah. Galen's here. No, Galen's not here. Galen's not here. Okay. He said he did it with his sons. And doing Passport to Purity with your children, there's five CDs in here. How many of you are not acquainted with it? Anyone not acquainted with you? There's some not acquainted with it. There's five CDs in here. You can get this from, it's Dennis and Barbara Rainey's material. And once again, I would listen to all of it before you use it. But there's five CDs in there. There's two CDs for fathers and sons, and there's two CDs for mothers and daughters. And you know, if a mother's not comfortable doing it, I've had fathers who did it with their daughters as well, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't think there's a problem with that. And if a dad's absent, I think a mother can do it with sons, but I think it's ideally situated for a father and sons and mother and daughter. And then there's a parent CD to listen to. But it opens the door to talk to your children about sexuality. But you don't wait till they're 10 and 12. But what if you use some of these other materials and you're capturing their heart and you're connecting with them and you're telling them about, you know, giving them protection and tools and safeguarding their heart and you're talking to them at a young age and you keep on talking and interacting with them and meeting their childish curiosity as it grows, it's not going to be a struggle doing that. But if you don't talk to them and you don't capture their hearts and all of a sudden you think they're going to hit 12 or 13, now you're going to have the talk, guess what? You're going to struggle. You're going to struggle. See, that's the reason why you capture their hearts early, because then you don't have that big battle to fight with. One of our salesmen at Ebling's, Burnell Martin, we just wrapped up Encourage Men, and I had the last session on men walking in vision. And the week before, the Saturday before, he told me, he says, hey, Jason, he said, and he borrowed that set from me. And he said, Jason, he says, this Saturday, he says, my son's 12. And he said, we like to hunt. So they went up to Dalmatia to a pheasant farm, and they went pheasant hunting. They each got two birds. And he says, from there, we're going down to Cabela's, and then from there, we're going home. So they listened to the CDs while they're driving up to Dalmatia, an hour and a half, and then to Cabela's, and then on the way home. And, you know, it was so cool because he says, I was nervous because I wasn't sure about talking to my son about this. We hadn't really talked a lot about this before. But he says, I was amazed at a couple things. I was amazed at how much he already knew. And they are in a very conservative setting, fairly sheltered. But he says, I was amazed at how much he already knew, and I was amazed at the questions that he was willing to ask me and talk about. But you see, those CDs open the door to be able to talk about sexuality, masturbation, just how their bodies are made, how the opposite sex is put together. I mean, it just opens the door to talk in a healthy, wise, and right way. It's just a way to use. So he did that, and so I talked to him before Encouraged Men, and then he said, oh, he says, Jason, he says, it was wonderful. He said, I'm so grateful that you told that you showed that to me and introduced it to me. And my son said, Dad, thanks. This is an awesome day. And do you know what he did? Now, do you know what he did on that day? He opened the door, and they talked about all those questions and interaction on very sensitive material. But he opened the door that his son now will be able to, he knows that his dad is safe, and he can come and talk to him about anything. See, Dad became very vulnerable and opened the door for his son and come to talk to him. He is going to porn-proof his son. He's going to make his son, his son's going to grow up responsible. Responsible for the girls that he meets. Got a phone call yesterday. Young man said his girlfriend's dealing with panic attacks. And we sort of discovered why. Okay, she never connected with her dad. So there's no dad connection at all. And then she was sneaking out the house to meet a young man, and then they were doing wrong, inappropriate activity. And then all he wanted was just to use her, and he was not interested. And he told her, he said, I don't really like you anyway. I like somebody else. She was devastated. So now the panic attacks come from she's afraid her boyfriend's going to do the same thing and leave. And he told me last night, he says, what she really needs to do is she needs to find out what it really means to have a relationship with God. And I agree with that. So we'll have to work on that. But you know what? It goes back to the fact that she never connected with her dad. Her dad never jerk-proofed her. She was very vulnerable to some guy who made arrangements for her to sneak out of the house at night while her parents were sleeping. Okay? What do you want your children to do? What do you want your daughter to do? Okay? You can change that. You can prevent those things now. Are you with me? Okay. This to me is we can stop this stuff. We can. And what we can't stop, we can deal with redemptively, because some things can happen that you still can deal with it redemptively. And then the last one, okay. That age group, that 10 to 14, I believe very strongly that, you know, you can have and how do you do that? Well, you plan a get-together, and you have him involved with it, and ask him what his favorite foods are, and you plan it, and you ask people who are very significant in his life, and even he can even suggest some. But if a grandpa is a person that would be significant, maybe the pastor, or maybe just an uncle, or somebody he really connects with, a friend, you arrange to have a very special night, and you celebrate him turning that age. That's what they do with in the Jewish boys. In fact, it's fascinating that when Jesus was, they were coming back from Jerusalem, and they went 2 days, and Jesus was missing. Do you think they were lousy parents, Joseph and Mary? Why could they go two days, and not miss Jesus? Well, I think there's an answer to it, and that is, he was a man. Okay, he had gone through the rite of manhood. He had gone through the bar mitzvah. And when I think what we must do is we must eliminate hormone-driven adolescence in both our young men and our young ladies. eliminate hormone-driven adolescence. Hormone-driven adolescence is an acceptable, is an accepted thing in our culture. It is what's causing huge amounts of problems. We accept adolescent behavior. No. We can make that transition. And we, once again, that vision for manhood and womanhood, and then the transition from manhood to womanhood with the bar mitzvah and the bat mitzvah for the girls. So then you can have a special time, and then you can ask those men, you can prepare them ahead of time to speak something into their your son's life that's going to be meaningful, a blessing. And then you can pray over him, and you can have him gather around, lay hands on him, and give him a vision for manhood. And give him the charge of manhood. Not a vision of manhood, but a charge of manhood. For you gals and your daughters, celebrate womanhood. Have your, you know, talk to your girls when they're 8, 9 about what's going to be coming. Talk to them about what happens when their pituitary gland is the time clock in their bodies, and it's going to determine when they become a woman. And it's not the same for all. For some girls, it might start at an earlier age than others, and for some, it might be later. But God has a time clock for each one of them to become women. And just tell them, to prepare them for their menstrual cycle. You know, we know some gals who, their mothers never told them about it, and no one else told them about it. They thought they were bleeding to death. They had no idea what was happening. How sick. Okay? So mothers, you can tell them, hey, listen, I want to tell you what's coming. And God is going to prepare you to become a woman. And your time clock, that pituitary gland, is going to start secreting hormones, progesterone and estrogen, and it's going to start changing you. It's going to start, your hips are going to start getting wider, your breasts will start developing, and then you're going to start a menstrual flow. And you tell them about it and say, listen, Let's do it this way. When that happens, when you start spotting and you recognize it, you see it, you come tell mom and we are going to party. Okay? See, ahead of time, they know you're going to party. Then instead of going, oh, what's happening? They go, hey, mom! Okay? Guess what? Now you're going to celebrate womanhood. And you could arrange it ahead of time that maybe it's just going to be you and her at the lobster house or whatever. But, you know, whatever she chooses is a neat place. And then, you know, you can do the, maybe you want to do a weekend away or something like that. But you can celebrate it. And all of a sudden, instead of it being a dreadful thing, of course, if every that time of the month you're going around moping and then forget it. But if you see, we can embrace manhood and womanhood with our children and walk them into it. And then they start seeing. And you talk to them, what? How does a man act? Well, all women are safe in men's company. You can read the woman at the well. And it was just Jesus and the woman at the well. She was safe. Any other man, she probably wouldn't have been safe. That's why she was there at the time of day. You already know that. Okay, because he wasn't a man. He was the man. And you teach your son to become the man, not one of those guys. You teach him to be the man. You teach your woman to be the woman. You talk to her about protecting her purity. There's the garden wall. Couple that you can start early on. The garden wall, the princess and the kiss. That's a cool story. Princess and the kiss, garden wall, really neat stories. Those, you can read those. Those are fine when they're 4, 5, 6. They're fine when they're 8 and 10. They're just good books that give your girls a vision of protecting what God has given them. Their purity, to care for it. And then the last one is preparing for marriage. You know, preparing your children for marriage. It says fathers, It says, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. Now, how many men here had fathers that took you aside before you got married and talked to you about what it was going to be like to live with this woman? How many here? Hands? Two, three, four. Good. Any others? But see, that's a minority. That's an exception. But I would like you to hear, I want you to hear something. I think it's your responsibility. I think it's your responsibility. Don't let your sons get married. Don't let them start dating without you talking to them about how to treat this young woman and why. I don't have the handout with me, but we talk about the development of intimacy when we talk to children. You should have that handout. If you want it, I'll see that you get it. But the development of true intimacy and to know the cause and effect that God has built into courtship, and how that if a young man doesn't protect that young lady, how it's going to damage her heart and damage her spirit. And the very thing that after they get married, she always asks this question, why did he want me? Why did he marry me? Did he want me because of who I am as a person, or did he want my body? And if there's been defrauding and sexual activity before marriage, she always knows the answer. And then after she gets married, she starts shutting down physically because she feels like a prostitute. She feels used. Very interesting, long quote by Chuck Swindoll on that handout. And see if we can talk to our sons and our daughters and say, here is what happens. This past weekend, we were out at Shalom, out where Faith Builders, and we talked. We had a youth conference out there, and I went over that Friday night, and it was so neat because some of the young people said, you know, I heard it from several young men and young ladies. They said, well, they tell us no, you shouldn't get sexually involved, but they never gave us the reasons. You told us the reasons, and it makes sense. You see, biblical healthy family life. And faith itself, to me, is logical. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. That word is Greek for logos. I mean, the Greek word is logos. And that's where that's the foundations of our word logical. In the beginning was logic. Jesus is logic. God is logic. His word is logical. The other things I don't understand, but the time will come when our eyes are going to be open and we will see the logic behind it all. I'm convinced of that. And biblical courtship, godly courtship, is logical. And when we don't teach the logic to our children, they can't see the reasons why, and they go, oh, they're just trying to keep us from having fun. No, no, no. There's cause and effect. Okay, we need to teach our children. Prepare them for marriage. Titus 2:4 says, Paul's saying, Titus, you teach the older women that they must teach the younger women how to love their husbands. I asked the guys, how many gals here had mothers that took you aside and really taught you how to love your husbands? How many moms? How many girls? Okay, back there's one. Anyone else? There's another one. Awesome. You see, but oh, there's another one back there. Okay, three. But you see, that's a minority. Did I tell you this before? I think I might have told you this before. At Encourage Men, we had the wives' night. We had 75 wives. And I asked the question, how many of you had older women, your mothers, teach you how to love your husbands? And they were all married. Two hands out of 75 went up. And I said, is there any wonder why we have marriage problems and we have family problems when we are actually disobeying what God tells us to do? The older women are to teach the younger women how to love their husbands. Now, it isn't agape love. That's phileo. That's how to be your husband's friend. A man needs a friend. So you mothers, don't let your daughters get married without you teaching them how to become their husband's friend. You surely have learned a few things from living with that guy, their dad. Share it with them. Teach them. Prepare them for marriage. Teach them about their sexuality. Teach them some techniques. Yes, they can learn a lot on their own, but why not prepare them for it? Why not share some things with them? Some very, very good friends. She was my third cousin, and she married my best friend. And their honeymoon was a disaster because nobody prepared them for their sexuality. Okay. Don't let that happen. As parents, let's, and some of you probably have really young children, but some of you have older children. Let's prepare our children. Let's accept the responsibility of being the godly parents. God gave our children parents to teach them the most important things about life. And if we don't teach it to them, they are going to learn it. Where do you want them to learn it from? All right. You have a handout. Let's look at it just briefly here. Before we look at the handout, any comments? Any comments that you have to share? Any questions? Anything you disagree with? Don't like? No, feel free. I would like to hear from you. Anything you want to share with the group that you've learned? Vernon. Well, it's not that you don't stem their curiosity. When the curiosity is there, you give them age-appropriate information. Okay. For example, if you have "My body is private," okay, you teach them what's good touch and what's bad touch. That you can talk about that. That book talks about it. If you like the Weaverland Conference version, you can do that. And so you could read that to them, and then you give them tools. Now, if you see them touching someone else or trying to look at someone else, that's when you say, "Hey, do you remember what Dad talked to you about this? You know what Mom talked to you about this? Let's talk about this again. This is what we were talking about." You know, that's your sister's body. You leave that alone. You are not to touch her there. You can have fun. You can play together. But there are areas that are her body privately alone, and you don't go there. So you don't allow the invasive curiosity. But you go back and say, "Do you remember what we talked about? Let's go over it again. Let's go back and look at it again. I want to give you tools because I don't want anybody touching you there, but I also don't want you touching anyone in those areas that are covered by the swimsuit or your underwear." Okay? And you talk about it. And then you say, "And son or daughter, if I catch you doing that, you know, Dad will have to discipline you. And you probably aren't going to enjoy that. So Dad means this. This is serious. Mom means this." But if you just don't talk about it and you don't give them the reasons, just say, "No, you stop it." Guess what they're going to do as soon as you aren't around? They're going to pursue it. So you give them reasons. They can understand and they can reason. But then you follow it through with some discipline. I don't know if that's okay. Anyone else? Any other comments? Yes. Sure. Yep.
I just think that's how it is. And even, like you said, older, I like what you did when our kids got older. Jaron took me out on dates. And he was taught how he needed to treat a girl and open the door for her and all that other things. And you took Laura out. And we had fun.
Yeah,
so
it was fun. Yes. No, thank you, dear. That's really accurate. And yeah, like you said, changing a diaper, you don't make a big issue of it. Well, how did you say it? It should be just... It's just a natural thing. You just change a diaper. You don't try and go hide or something like that. It's just... And you don't keep the other people, your children. And if they're curious, fine, they're curious. And then, what's that? Well, God made them different. God made a little boy different than a little girl. And you call body parts by body part names. Okay. And you don't give too much information. If they ask a question, answer the question. Don't go into three questions down the road. You wait till they get old enough to ask that question. Okay. You don't want to it's like one guy says they were having a get together and the little boy was upstairs. And he hollers out the window, and this was a church gathering out there. He goes, "Dad, what's sex?" And he's going, "What do I do with this?" He goes, "Why do you want to know?" "Well, here on the driver's license it says sex, and then M and..." See, if he would have started in on an explanation, he would have answered a question that he wouldn't have had to answer, and it was not time to answer that question. Oh my! So it's after 8. We'll wrap this up. But what I'd like you to do, and you can read this. This is something I wrote up a little while back, and I started sharing my heart on this paper. So you can read that on your own. If you flip the page open, there's a picture of two flowers there, and on the left it's flourish and secure, and if you look down at the bottom, you have those foundational truths, that love, belonging, significance with discipline. And when you have that as a foundation, that child can flourish and they can be secure, and they're going to grow up with caring and initiative and relational and confident and flexible. But on the other hand, on the other side, if it's performance-based love and acceptance and the discipline is inconsistent, harsh, or there's no discipline, they're going to struggle and they're going to be insecure. And they're going to be moody, and they're going to have high expectations, self-focused, judgmental, inflexible, okay? So it just shows the cause and effect there, and I think that's really very accurate. And what you want there, number two, and my apologies, I corrected this, but I didn't see it till after I printed them off. On the first page, it starts up there, number one, capturing the hearts of children. Number two should have been relational rather than behavioral basis for child training, and that should have been off to the side. And then number three should have been down where B is and C. So my computer automatically did some things that I wasn't paying attention to. So my apologies there. I did correct it, but after I had them all printed up. But you want a relational rather than a behavioral basis for child training. Unconditional love and acceptance, conditional approval, and insistence on performance and obedience. As a parent, you love high principles. You love honesty and kindness more than their good pleasure. You are not designed to be your children's friend. You're to be their parent. And yes, there's times when you can be friends, but there's times when they aren't going to like you. And that's okay. That's okay. I had a fellow I worked with. In fact, we babysit him, and he grew up and got married. Today, they're divorced. But, you know, he would not discipline his children. I said, why your children need discipline. He says, they won't like me. Enough said. All right, we talked a lot about that, okay? You wouldn't lie or steal to make them happy, and they need to know that too. Okay, you love honesty and kindness more than their good pleasure. As they enter society, so much of life will depend upon performance, schoolwork, committees, husband, wife, etc. So the need for them to share their toys, pick up their toys, help with the family chores is vital. So those are parts of discipline that you if you don't put that there, all the love and acceptance and belonging, you'll spoil them. Okay, you must. This is not just easy. Everybody's lovey-dovey. No. This is a disciplined lifestyle, but they don't have to earn their love, they don't have to earn their acceptance, and they don't have to earn their significance. They have to earn their approval. Okay? And then balanced and appropriate discipline. And I'll let you finish up there. But flip to the back page. My brother has a diagram there that he put together, and so I borrowed it from him. But on the back, it's attachment and bonding cycles. And this is where, in dealing with hurting people, this is what I see over and over and over again. At the top there, you have a baby, okay? And that baby comes into your life secure and at rest. You know, all babies don't, because there's a lot of things that happen in utero. If you have a mother who is going through all kinds of horrible things when she's carrying the child, that child's going to deal with all the chemical changes that are going on in that mother's life, and we know that, whether it's drugs or alcohol or a high level what's the hormone that's released when you're all angry and tense all the time? Yeah, adrenaline. See, that affects the baby too. Yeah, that baby's getting adrenaline high, which is not healthy for it. Okay, so you can't control. You know, some of those things. We adopt babies and they have all those problems. But on the other hand, we can control that, hopefully, when our children, to the greatest extent that we can. But anyway, let's just lay that aside. But when a child comes, they're secure, at rest, an infant. And then the number one box there is need. They're hungry, they're cold, they're wet. And so they express that need, number two, crying. And number three, they get warm, caring, adequate, consistent adult response, and that builds trust, okay? And then number four, need reduction and affirmation set self-perception of being valued. Now, go back to number three again. You say, well, that's just ordinary. You know, that's what parents do, yeah? But, you know, I just heard of someone told me about, in fact, it was from friends of ours. They have a child, and a foster child, and those parents would put an older child and that child, the other older child was like 4 years old, and they would put some kind of, you know, extra absorbent diapers on, and they would lock them in their bedroom, the two of them together, and from 8 o'clock in the evening till maybe 10 o'clock the next morning, without going in and checking on them. So the children were taken from them. Okay, so you see, when they had a need, they were not met with warm, caring, adequate, consistent adult response. So now guess what kind of problem that child's going to grow up with? See, there's where the problems lie. So then four, the need reduction, because you take care of it, and affirmation sets self-perception of being valued. That's huge. Your significance, if your parents care for your needs on a consistent basis, on a regular basis, just like those children, they won't have a perception of being valued. They'll have just the opposite. And then number five, he's happy, she's happy, plays, rests, healthy bonding. Okay, that's the normal healthy bonding cycle. Attachment cycle. You go down below and you start out with an infant in the middle, and then there's a need and you stay on the inside. Number one, the need. Number two, the expression of the need. Number three, response is inadequate, inappropriate, and inconsistent. Number four, neglect, rejection, punishment sets self-perception of what? Not being valued, not being important. And then you go up to number five, there's fear and there's an unhealthy bonding. And then you go around to six, and then there's more needs as the child gets older. And you can see this you can expand this up at the top too, and that circle can go around two again with six, seven, and eight. As the child gets older, there's going to be new needs, and if you meet those needs, and you're aware of those expression of needs, and you keep meeting them in an adequate, consistent way, that perception of being valued stays there as the child gets older. That doesn't change. It just keeps going a healthy attachment cycle. But at the bottom, it just keeps, okay, the expression of need is there, and then the response is inadequate, inconsistent, inappropriate, and then number nine, pain is internalized, and there's a false guilt. They start blaming themselves. Well, I must not be worth it. I must not be worthy of attention. I must not be worthy of care. And so that perception of false shame and false guilt is there. And then number 10, feelings are denied, and they're deadened, and then that child becomes filled with shame, and that ends up just lowering their self-worth. I don't like self-esteem. Self-worth. Jesus, God made us. It is He that has made us, not we ourselves. So, and God doesn't make any junk. So our children need self-worth, not self-esteem. They need self-worth. They need to see their value, and we give that to them. So what happens after that? Number 11, self-abuse reinforces self-perception of worthlessness, creates sensations to prove that they're alive, and cover pain of rejection. So this is where you have a development of masturbation and addictions to it, and addictions to other things. I was talking to someone recently. This is a beautiful young mother now, and she has quite a number of children, but she's still crying out and hurting, but she's doing really well. And Grace and I met with them a few weeks ago. But anyway, she told me, and I don't think Grace was not present when she mentioned this, she told me on the phone on this, she said that she knew she had a dad who loved her, but she never felt it. She never heard it, never experienced love from him. And she said that she had a teacher at school, and she misbehaved one time, and that teacher was a female teacher, and that teacher paddled her. Now, I want you to hear something. This blew me out of the water. I didn't even tell Grace about this, so she's hearing it for the first time. But she said, that teacher paddled me. And she says, she goes, it felt so good to have that attention and have that paddling that I started acting up on a regular basis to get that attention some more and to get paddled again. And then she said, as she discovered masturbation, she would think of that paddling and that attention when she masturbated. And now today, when she's married, she says she struggles making love to her husband without thinking of being paddled. Do you see the craziness that happens? Now she's finding healing, and I think she's doing fine. She told me that she's really working through this, and she's finding answers because she's connecting to God. But she wasn't, yeah, anyway. This is a crazy thing. I mean, this is what's happening. This is what Frank is saying here in number 11, that self-abuse. And because of wrong values, and so you see, as parents, we set the tone. Her dad loved her, but never expressed it. There was no affection. There wasn't touch. And guys, you know, here, I want to tell you something that I believe with all my heart. And I was so grateful for an older man that came to me. He says, Jason, he says, and this was, Gordon MacDonald said it in The Effective Father, too. He said that girls will get their concept of femininity from dads, not moms. And if a girl hears from her daddy that she is attractive and that she's loved, and that she is a treasure, and she gets affection from him, physical affection, hugs, appropriate, never sexual, because then you will destroy her. But if she gets appropriate affection from her dad and words of affirmation, along with firm discipline and boundaries, she will grow up feeling very secure. And she will not try, and she won't need to seek the attention from a young man. I believe that. Do you ladies believe that? So guys, we have a job. We have a task to do. And we need it. We need to. I encourage. An older man told me. He says, Jason. He said, he was already. Went through this, but he said, Jason, he said, your daughter will need affection from you all the way, and he told me this when she was pretty young. He says, don't quit hugging her when she starts developing, when her breasts start developing, when she starts becoming a woman. Don't stop hugging her, because that's when she starts thinking she's an ugly duckling and don't know what's going on with her body. And he says, that's when she needs it more than ever. And it's so fascinating, because I had another situation where a young lady, this is a married woman, said, when I hit puberty, my dad just quit touching me because he was afraid to touch me. He never, no more hugs. So guys, I share that with you because we can jerk proof and we can care for our daughters' hearts so that they feel protected. And you know, I do the same with my, you know, I only had one son and one daughter, but my son, we always, you know, we were always, you know, wrestling. We were always very physical. And today, we still give each other a hug when we see each other. I just believe that when Paul says, be kindly affectioned one to another, what do you think he meant? A cold handshake? I like to, you know, When I meet you brothers, I have no problem giving you a hug and saying, hey, it's so good to see you again. Don't have to hug every time. I'm not, you know, it's no big deal. I don't mind shaking hands either. That's great. But you know, God designed us to need affection, to need physical touch, appropriately, healthy, and rightly. And Satan wants to destroy that and use all kinds of the wrong kind of touch to really mess things up. I think we went over our time. It's time to quit. Any comments? Any questions? What are you thinking? Maybe you have some things you challenge. I'm fine with that. I am. You're just hearing a little guy share his heart. That's what you're hearing tonight.
I just want to share a story. And I think the challenge for me right now, when you said that until children need our love all our life, for our care. But this happened when Alicia was 16. She just got her driver's license. And I think it was the first time she filled up with gas. She's at a gas station. And this guy comes up to her, she was by herself, and says, here's my phone number. And Alicia looks at him and says, four? And that was it. She came home and told the story. I was furious. But I was also going, whoo.
Yes! She had a daddy that loved her. She knew it.
I think it hit me how, it actually almost scared me how powerful that connection
was. Absolutely. Thank you, Vernon. That is so accurate. Anybody who counsels runs into all those girls who didn't receive that and were so vulnerable to any jerk that came down the road. I could tell you horror story after horror story, and I'm sure you could too. Thank you for that one. That's a powerful testimony. Guys, let's do it. Don't worry about being perfect. You're not, but be courageous and loving and kind in your own way. Grace.
You can always get help, too. You can always say, I don't know all the answers. I'll get an answer.
Yeah. Find an older man and say, hey, see, I like the way your kids are turning out. Give me some input. Yeah, I agree. You don't have to have the answer right away. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was referring to you, Gail, a little while ago when doing the passport to purity, and I shared another one of our fellows at work that I just, yeah. Any other comments? Any other thoughts? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. 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 Yes. Yes. We do. And so that opens a whole other conversation. But we do. We need to find healing for ourselves. And if there's been hurt and abuse in our background, you know, and I think I had brought some brochures along last time. I don't know if I have any with this time, but in April 8th and 9th, we're doing a Preparing for Marriage. And I was working on that material today. And one of the things that we're going to be covering on Saturday before lunch is healing the wounds of the past. And one of the things that we're going to say is do not carry pain and guilt into your marriage. Deal with it now. And we want to teach them how to deal with that. Are they back in the hallway? Okay. Do not carry pain and guilt and shame into your marriage. Yeah. Let's deal with it now. And so we just, that's going to be a very important part of encouragement, of that weekend. And we're going to try and have couples there. We're going to give them some homework over the lunch hour. And when they come back, we're going to have some couples there who can counsel.
Question, what would you say about doing passport to purity with somebody who's not, with somebody else who doesn't have a good mom or dad?
Mm-hmm. I think it would be fine, but you probably should get permission from whoever is their authority. Ask them for permission to do so. You might know that you won't get that. I don't know. I probably would be a little hesitant to, but on the other hand, if they're depending on you or someone else for help and assistance, or if you know it's just a total negligent situation, wow. I think my first response would be to get permission if possible. If not, I'm probably gutsy enough, I'd do it anyway. maybe you have some other input here. I get pretty frustrated at what's out there and what the results are going to be if we don't do it. Yeah. And you know, let me just finish one thing before we go there. I think I mentioned this last time I was here. 1 Corinthians 4:15 says, though you have 10,000 instructors in Christ, yet have you not many fathers. So I believe that us men and us women need to be dads and moms to other people, a whole lot more people than just our children. I believe that's our calling. Yeah. They are, it is. When I teach that, when I teach that whole concept in preparing for marriage, in fact, I just did that out at Pittsburgh, or out there when we were there this weekend. I talked about how that both man and woman is created in God's image, not just men. I think men have the bigger impact because of what they represent as far as God. But because men and women are created in God's image, a mother also can damage the image of God hugely and can make it look beautiful and attractive. So I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I'm not a male chauvinist. Any other comments? Yeah, I like that. Men teach their sons how to be a man, and mothers teach their sons it's good to be a man. And then you switch that around. Yeah, that's. I like that. I do like that. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Father, for being with us this evening. Thank you that we could be gathered together as your children. Oh, Father, you're the perfect Father, and we're so imperfect. But, oh, Father, we're crying out to you. And, Father, I'm crying out to you that your anointing would rest on each mother and father, each father and mother here tonight. That anointing would be your Holy Spirit's teaching their hearts and their minds and filling them with a deep, deep love for their children that never quits, and that they can feel your unconditional love and acceptance and belonging so they can pour that out on their children. And then that your wisdom would and your discernment would just fill us so that as we deal with situations and our children present different challenges and they come all of a sudden and just snap decisions seem to need to be made, would you give us the wisdom and the discernment? Would you place that on each one of the parents and grandparents here tonight so that we can raise up the next generation of a godly seed for you, bringing glory and honor to your name? Thank you, Father, in Jesus' name.